We had a really quite remarkable vessel for letting the light shine here. I'm very aware of the cycles of history stretching back at least as far as human beings can see it for quite some time. And we are the very specific fruit of a very particular thread in that history. From an outer standpoint, it might not seem like much, but that would be incorrect. There have been relatively limited containers for the emergence of conscious being. Again, from a human perspective, it almost seems to be nothing. This, again, that would be misperception. The great red dragon continues to crash around in the heaven of human consciousness, frightening people into submission, into obedience. Its seven heads and 10 horns, occupying all manner of form and channels within the body of humanity. There are some modern upgrades. Social media is the new head, pumping out all kinds of sewage and blotting out the stars. You slay the dragon by calling it by its true name. Also known as shining the light. Again, remarkably simple. This is what Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney did in Davos a few weeks ago in his speech at the World Economic Forum. Interestingly, the theme of the conference this year was a quote, spirit of dialogue, which people noted was not exactly what was going on, but never mind. Carney really stunned the assembled crowd this year by naming some uncomfortable truths. He quoted a remarkable essay by Václav Havel, the dissident playwright and eventually president of Czechoslovakia, then Czechoslovakia, an essay called The Power of the Powerless. The resonance of his talk, I think, is worth noting. He received a standing ovation at Davos, and it's been echoing, his words echoing around for some weeks now. And I think there's a reason. So I thought to emphasize this a little bit this morning. Surround it. Pliny notes that Havel starts with the story of the so-called greengrocer. He says, every morning a shopkeeper places a sign in his window, "Workers of the world unite." He doesn't believe it. No one does. But he places a sign anyway to avoid trouble, to signal compliance, to get along. Because every shopkeeper on the street does the same, the system persists, not through violence alone, but through the participation of ordinary people in rituals they privately know to be false. Carney goes on, Havel called this living within a lie. The system's power comes not from its truth, but from everyone's willingness to perform as if it were true. And its fragility comes from the same source. When even one person stops performing, when the greengrocer removes his sign, the illusion begins to crack. Carney, as a head of state, was responding to tectonic shifts in the geopolitical order, and he called the nations of the world to take the sign from out of their window and to admit that some kind of different order was unfolding. It's not exactly a new phenomenon. The human beings feel powerless. The human condition wallows in victimization. Even people in so-called positions of power often feel quite powerless themselves. I've worked with many leaders over the years who have said precisely this. People imagine I can do a lot, CEOs and even prime ministers will say, but I can't. What is this phenomenon of powerlessness, and why is it so pervasive? This belief. Carney went further, however. He said that the order that we've been living with over the last 80 years has not just changed. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition, he said. This is most certainly true, but the rupture goes far beyond states vying for dominance, which is not actually that new. Carney was thinking of this in terms of the rupture in the geopolitical order and institutional failure, the rising authoritarianism in the great power countries, which is an undeniable and worldwide phenomenon. Collapse of the so-called rule-based order. But the breakdown is really much more profound, and what was fascinating to me was the level of response that this got. Carney took some risks to do this. This may not seem like a risk, but it was. As we might have sometimes put it, the bus of human nature has already hit the wall. It's just a matter of discovering it. Now, this is often a sign of or a pause for fear, but the opposite is really the opportunity. What I'm seeing this is a much wider movement to begin to tell the truth best can be done about the fact that the wider system, the wider pattern of illusion under which human beings have been living isn't true. And the response is enthusiasm. I'm not sure people know quite what they're responding to exactly, but I think this is an amazingly good sign in a way. It puts some responsibility on anyone who might have an idea of what the non-illusory condition consists of. Havel said in his essay that putting up the sign is living a lie. It's like saying, I'm afraid and therefore unquestionably obedient. People do this because they collude. They deceive themselves about their collusion, what Havel rather rudely calls the low foundations of their obedience. The antidote, Havel called it, said, was to live within the truth. Havel says, under the ordinary surface of the life of lies, there slumbers the hidden sphere of life in its real aims, of its hidden openness to truth. The profound crisis of human identity brought on by living within a lie, a crisis which in turn makes such a life possible, certainly possesses a moral dimension as well. It appears, among other things, as a deep moral crisis in society. Havel, almost 50 years ago, called for a return to the human order. His solution was not one political party should rise up against another. It was to find a realignment with the truth. Now, this comes across to some as quite abstract. Well, what are you going to protest then? What are you going to do? The courageous response is, I'm going to stand still. What's needed now is encouragement in this ruptured and awakening to ruptured state of the way out, which is available. Not only available, it never left, and it's beckoning for attention. What's exciting is that I see all around me not just a willingness, but a hunger to know what this means. What does it mean to live within the truth? There, of course, are those people who are less interested. That's not of much interest. The point is, as things look even more unstable, which this seemed to continue to be, this point of stability looks like discovering this perhaps initially seemingly abstract, but increasingly very concrete state of living within the truth, which turns out to be amazingly practical. It doesn't take much to recognize that life is endeavoring to bring creative order into one's life. The difficulty has been the degree to which everyone has been involved in the battle of resisting it. That resistance continues, but increasingly we learn to transform it in ourselves. It's not the factors in other people's consciousness. It's our own. The fascinating job now, I think, is allowing the comfort of living in a powerless state to dissolve. It may seem odd to state it as that, but I think there's been a tremendous collective comfort zone. We're powerless. It's how it is. Things are unfolding the way they do. You can't do much about it. To step past that, people think maybe, well, that looks like poking your head above the parapet, so you're going to get in trouble. It really means something else altogether. The steps of movement out of comfort, the comfort of the powerless state, the state that is a lie, and into a new state has been glimpsed by people over the ages. We appreciate, celebrate this emergence when we see it. One of my favorite examples is Rosa Parks, whose feet did not get tired, as the myth goes. On a bus in the cold winter in 1955, she was seated in the no man's land in the middle of the bus when the bus driver asked her to move. And at 6 o'clock, she was sitting. At 6:01, she was sitting. There was no outer movement at all. People think leadership involves great acts or great speeches. In her case, she just sat there. But later she said, "My feet didn't get tired. I decided to act the way a free woman would." In other words, she decided to live within the truth. And that one act of refusing to give up her seat has resonated for 7 decades. And there are other examples. Living within the truth puts us into connection with the power of the whole, which is organizing everything, everywhere. It's immense. The word immense doesn't really even cover it. Learning to be functional within the flow of the power of the whole is the true positioning of human consciousness. The fact that it's been abandoned for however many centuries is beside the point. It needs to be brought now into form, brought to focus now through me. And I find some measure of appreciation and awareness of this is about all that's needed. One doesn't really need, nor does one ever get, a preview of the design that would emerge as a result of one's steps. I think there's probably more awareness available than not, but up until now, I don't think we've been hugely trustworthy to have it. Nevertheless, this is the result of however many centuries of work by life to provide a point of focus for exactly this. And here we are. It's quite amazing. And it's, if one really lets it in, a little bit mind-blowing, really, at least at a human level. I mean, one could get inured to this, I suppose, but it's worth letting go of any of that. To be in position to play at the levels that are now being called for as the wider patterns of leadership endeavor to point out the lie that has captured human consciousness. The light is being shined. The dragon is being cast out. A point of focus for that is adequately present, it seems, to let that process continue. And the results are the results, which, oh, by the way, look like turbulence. At least at one level. So, I'm grateful to start this hour in this way, and perhaps there's more to come for me at the close, but I will stop here and pass it over to my esteemed colleague, Polka.
Thank you, Bill. That was a vast and accurate perspective, born out of your living experience, as I know from my own personal experience of our friendship. As you were telling the story of the greengrocer in Czechoslovakia of old, I got the vision that maybe at the time I would have had the inclination and guts to put a slightly modified piece of paper into my shop window, and would have said, the same type font, by the way, "The workers of the world are united." And maybe in small print, "and so is everybody else." Changing an aspirational statement of a socialist vision to a statement of truth. It is interesting that the great religions and the great movements, in this case, political movements of the world, in essence, all strive towards that goal of a society where everybody acknowledges their oneness. And the usual strife and fighting is no more. And even more interestingly, all of these efforts have failed because of that very basic noble ambition to change something, to get going, to follow my brilliant path to reach that goal. Inevitably, that is a recipe for failure. As one of our common mentors, Bill, likes to say, there's a notion of a leader being tasked to take his people out of the wilderness. And our mentor often quotes his father and saying, oh, no, 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 no. You got it all wrong. The task is to get the wilderness out of the people. In other words, a change in consciousness. The topic of powers is, of course, interesting and pertinent. And I recall a scene in my Oxford days. I know our friends Eugen Park and Bruce Allen were part of that scene. I'm not sure who you were, Bill. But we had a visiting speaker, a guy from California who was a big shot in the New Age movement. He had invented some improvement seminars that particularly Eugen was gung-ho on and thought this thick-headed German friend of his should definitely take these seminars and loosen up a little bit. Anyways, be that as it may, this fellow had clearly a very big ego, at least on the surface, and great success, financial and so forth. One of his famous lines was, coming from California, "Don't worry, as long as I'm in the building, there will be no earthquake." And he started an initiative to end hunger in the world in a few years and so forth. Anyways, we were walking with his fellow in Oxford down the streets, and he was pushing a theme to at least Eugene, Bruce, and I of, "You're young guys, don't you feel powerless? How are you planning to change the world?" And he only got bemused smiles from us. Because we already at that time had touched the representation of the truth. In this case, through the emissary community in Mickleton and elsewhere. But an exemplification in some of that very thing that you've been talking about, Bill. Knowing the truth and knowing the power of the universe, which is running everything. And so we've, even as young and ignorant as we were at the time, at least speaking for myself, we did not feel powerless in the least bit. Because we felt our life was given by this one power, and that was providing everything that we needed to do. And I don't think we have looked back on that insight. I think a lot of people think power comes from being connected to the right people, being in the right networks. These days, you cannot open a news site without the latest updates on somebody I won't name by name, but everybody knows, a sexual predator who had an amazing network of connections going all across the world, apparently. And that sexual predation is sort of the theme that is being presented. But the network was well beyond that. It was a so-called power network of money and influence and connecting a whole lot of people. Of course, it came tumbling down eventually, and the fallout is still happening. But while this is going on, people feel attracted to these networks because it looks like that's where power is, where deals are being made. But it's a very poor substitute for the network that life already provides. To give you an example, Sanford and I, and also Cliff Penball, whom many of you know, had the privilege of working with Bill and some other friends in West Concord in December. And at some point, Bill asked the question, well, to the assembled people, about seven or eight of us, well, what brought you here? Why are you here? And we gave different answers, ranging from, well, I took a plane, or Bill called me up and said, I should really come. Or, well, I had nothing better to do. Well, I'm not sure that anybody said that, but it's a common answer one could give. And in some sense, we could have said, well, we were all here because of the connection with Bill. But I think it dawned on everyone that this would have been an outer layer, all of these outer layers. Yeah, of course, we rented cars, came by public transport, walked on foot, took planes, whatever, to get there. And it was all by invitation, if you will. But the reality, and it came through Bill's humility in all of this meeting, the reality was life put this together. There's no way Bill or anybody else's mind could have said, let me see, here I have a list. We need an ex-military man. We need a guy from Australia. We need an old guy from civil rights movement and a software engineer and to balance things, a scientist and this and that. And whom do we have on the docket? Who is in my Rolodex? Okay, let's invite them. Just doesn't work that way. There was something much larger in motion and still is, which is life itself. And if you don't like that example, can't relate to it, then switch your view to the gallery view and think about, how did this gathering this morning happen? Right? Who put that together? Anybody here who went through a list of people and said, you should be here, you should be here, that person is needed? No, it's something else. Very long time ago in our training, you probably all heard the Psalm, what is it? 127 quoted. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain. Well, poetic language, but it's the truth, isn't it? Except what we're doing, whether it's building a house or building an organization or building a schedule for our next week's activities, except we let the one power of the universe that's animating everything have a say in what is needed. And us being willing to act upon that, if that is not in place, there's no power. There's a substitute of power. Maybe in the right network for a while, you have more influence on local affairs or something. Maybe you get more money in your bank account. But is that real? Maybe temporarily. What's real is what's been put together by life itself. And once we have that conviction, and I'm sure many of you, not all of you, do, and do have that experience, and increasingly live from that conviction, it's inseparable from us. It's not something we want to attain. It's a fact. It's the truth. Once we're in that position, whether these things that we have to build are small or large, it's the same principle. And we can relax knowing this and proceed. So thank you, Bill, for stimulating some anecdotes and maybe insights, but it's an absolute privilege to be with you today and in another context these days, because you know what you're talking about from experience. And I do. And when two are in agreement, or even more than two, Sanford included, many of you included, it's just marvelous to see what life wants to create. So much more powerful, if you want, and so much more exciting. So back to you, Bill.
The most direct manifestation of power in human consciousness is friendship. We all have the probably the echo in our minds of a phrase from long ago about what it means to be friends in a true sense. I very much appreciate the gift of that indirect experience that Volker and I have had over the years in Sanford now, as you were saying, in our new little container. I'll just say I'm very mindful sitting here of the presence of whose presence we are in. And whose responsibility we carry. And in that sense, how much more work there is yet to do to be carry the fullness of that responsibility. While we are, let's say, adequate for the moment, there's yet more to go. Not emphasizes itself to me in this moment for whatever reason. So I'm grateful for this moment. We have some time to talk together and have an actual spirit of dialogue. Whether that was really present at Davos or not, I don't know. But happy to open it up and I'll see where we go from here.
Well, thank you, Bill and Volker, for your spirit that's on Earth at this crucial time. I am thankful for what you both provide. And for everyone that is on the screen provides, and that's what has drawn us together, that thread, the thread of that golden love that sparked in us whenever it did and stayed with us. And it stayed with us, and that's why we gather. We obviously take care of our own worlds. And whatever comes to us comes very specifically right at our door to be that example of letting the light shine. I have a dear friend. She's Iranian. She's in our neighborhood here. And so involved in what's going on in that country. But she needs a landing point of light. And so comes. And comes usually wrapped up in all the political turmoil, and of course, having family there too. And so she feels it's her duty to go to all the protests, to speak her voice, and so on. And so, in the midst of all of this dialogue of the unreal world and even showing pictures and so on, she has turned and welcomes the light and is interested in, that's not what I see. There's something stronger here at work, something larger. And so, in the process of just having her come and share attunement, there's this release and holding something that is so precious in this point of connection. So we all have what's ours to do, to be that representation of light. And that's just one example that has come to me. And I appreciate everyone else's examples.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Pam. Bill and Volker, you have inspired, touched a muscle in me of greater greatness. It is so important that we are all together and that we know what we know and live what we know. I was thinking of the speech that our Prime Minister made in Canada and or in Dovis, and I thought Canada has been a sleeping giant, and his words said perhaps we're awakening some. And I say to Laura and to all of us, let's awaken some more, a lot more. Awaken to our own strength and our own ability to stay clear in our own heads and hearts, because that's where the power lives. Then you don't have to depend on anyone or anything. You're just part of a sleeping giant that is bringing power to the earth. An excellent presentation. Thank you, gentlemen.
Boker and Bill, I too would add my thanks and deep appreciation. It's always a thrill to hear from the two of you. It's always a joy. And this morning, talking about power reminded me of a book title of a book that came out a number of years ago called The End of Power. And it was talking about the shift that was going on, the change of power from the old institutional structures of government and boardrooms to something more innovative and new, still in the same level of human nature, of course. But the quote that really came to mind to me was from Marianne Williamson, who ran for president of a while back and was on the debate stage at Democratic debates, and I thought she added just a wonderful light to that stage. I think she wrote The Course in Miracles. The quote is that what we fear most is not our inadequacy, but how powerful we are. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. And I suspect that that is true in many places and maybe in us in times past, maybe even sometimes today. It is our power that frightens us because it is powerful. And yet, in an hour like this, when I look at the gallery and I see the power and I see the light and I feel it, I know that that power coming through shines a light into the world that changes things. And it is thrilling to be a part of that in an hour such as this and in every moment of every day. So thank you both for what you brought and opened up with us this morning.
So, and Volker, I also do so appreciate the tone that you have sounded today. I serendipitously had the privilege of hearing Mark Carney speak as well, and was astounded at the tone he sounded. And likewise, at the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games, Kirsty Coventry also spoke quite outstandingly. And she mentioned the term, which was, of course, very familiar to me, Ubuntu. And that term means I am because you are. And here, coming out of the ancient tribal past of a rural people, was a recognition of our oneness. And I loved what you said, Volker, about that little byline. We are one body. And I think I say this every time we get together, the utter joy is knowing one another, being able to recognize one another and share the consciousness that we do, because I know that the spark of that delight penetrates the body of humanity and allows it to rise up. And the Lord is with us, in us, inviting us all to participate in this great adventure of this incarnation and of what we are here to accomplish together. Thank you both and all.
Yes, thank you, Millie, everybody, and especially you, Bill and Volker. I think probably all of us felt a celebration of the significance of what Carney did in Davos. But what I appreciate especially is your link for taking that sign out of the window for us to go beyond our comfort zone. I was glad to hear Laura say greater greatness. You said, Bill, for now, awareness is probably enough, and kind of indicated that we know what yet to do when the moment comes. I have repeated sensings, both in what comes to me personally to do, but also sensings about what is potential for this collective, whatever the collective is, that have been blessed by this presence that you so beautifully brought vividly into our awareness. And I sense a hungering for what yet there is for us to do. There is much more for us to do. So in my life, I choose to go beyond my comfort zone. And isn't that why we came? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcia. Hi, Bill. Hi, Volker. This is Alice Penwell. And I just want to note, along with others, but I want to underline friendship. If you guys hadn't come together at Oxford, Cliff and I would never have found this group. The friendship of each one, the friendship of somebody just taking one step out or coming together and finding something in the Cotswolds. It was magic. And then you said, well, we can't help you with your visa because we're students. No, but you helped us with our knowing. And I think that's the friendship that is being asked for in every walk of all of our lives, is to emphasize the knowing of the presence, the knowing of true friendship that enhances everything and every step. So thank you so much, you and Volker.
Thank you all. Beautiful. Volker, anything you'd like to add?
Well, only I'm thankful, and the message is be thankful.
Yeah, I was very stimulating to expand as we did. To see the what is coming, what's next, or what's needed beyond what has been able to manifest so far. I think inquiry into what must be let into consciousness is what occurs to me. Through our friendships, through the network of wholeness that is what we've discovered and know over the years. Anyway, thank you all very much. Very good to be together.